friends, to Tanked Up, the podcast all about video games and beer. I'm one of your hosts, Ben, here with Lucy.
Hello.
Hey. Hi. It's episode 442, and we're going to open some beers, and we're going to talk about some games. Lucy, what are you drinking this evening?
I'm having a beer from Verdant.
Ooh.
It's Verdant, okay. I don't know why I thought it was a left-handed giant, but it's Verdant.
Is it a collaboration?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm just being stupid. It's a stronger strength take on the Big Stupid Westie.
Oh, and this is nice.
Their biggest, stupidest Westie, which is a 8% double IPA. Yeah, because I think their normal nice. Big Stupid Westie is probably around, it's probably around 6%, maybe 7% or something.
Mm.
Yeah, this is the Dipper version. Oh, let me have a look. It tells us the hops. On the hop side, it was Chinook, Columbus, Citra, Mosaic, and Simcoe. And on the cold side, it was Citra, Mosaic, Nelson Sauvin, and Simcoe. Yeah.
And nice.
That's it.
Yeah. Brilliant. Good stuff. Cool. I'm going to drink a beer from Beak. I've had a few from them recently. But again, as part of the shop around the corner, getting Beak in there, is a bunch of beers that I haven't drunk from them. And this is, it's a smaller percentage one, 25%. It's a double dry hopped pale called These Hills, which is, as the can art suggests, it's like a llama or an alpaca covered in people. There we go. And I don't think I've had it before.
No, that's a new one to me.
And potentially a new one from the Flavor Text as well. Brewed in celebration of our upcoming International Beer Festival. These Hills, this double dry top pale, is saturated in super fresh hops from lakeside ranches in Oregon, including hand-selected Idaho 7, an unusually tropical lot of Cascade. That's it. That's what we get.
Okay. Yeah, because where their brewery is, it's on these like white cliffs, isn't it? Looks very picturesque. I do want to visit them.
I did see that. I think their festival is very, like, this weekend or next weekend or, like, incredibly soon as well. Because I've seen a couple of other breweries who are part of that festival, like Left-Handed Giant and a few other people. Verdant as well, I think, are there sort of advertising that they're heading up there, basically. So I don't know if it's exactly this weekend, but it's probably very, very soon. Close to when we are recording, which is sort of early August. So I'm pouring. Soon. Have you poured?
No, because the listeners may have heard me go, oh, it was a bit lively at the start, so.
Fair.
But I am pouring.
That's a nice colour.
Oh, it's looking a bit clearer, as you'd expect from, like, a West Coast.
Yeah, I think when you first poured it, it was starting to look a bit hazy, but maybe that was just more the, sort of as everything was tumbling into the glass.
Yeah, it's not completely opaque. You can see a little bit through. It's not completely translucent either. Smells great. You can tell it's a double. Just because of, like, the strength of the, you can smell the alcohol and just, like, the sweetness on it. But also getting, like, tropical fruits, pineapple, mango.
Nice.
Maybe a bit of guava in there. Smells great. Head dissipated quickly, but that maybe because, like, most of it got on my hands, maybe. But yeah, it smells great. Not much carbonation, just a little bit. Ooh. Ooh. That's quite nice. I think it starts and ends pretty quickly. That's why it's like, ooh, just had to kind of like process what's going on. It's, oh, let me go for another sip.
It's always good to dip in again.
Yeah, everything happens like rather quickly.
Okay.
But you are getting those like tropical fruit flavors. You know, it's just like they come and go so quickly, it's like hard to grasp them, but you are getting like a bit, you know, some of that guava, some of that mango. But yeah, it feels like that window so short, and then it immediately just goes to the finish almost. It's like there's not enough time to luxuriate in a lot of those flavors. And then more of the bitter, piney, resinous kind of flavors just immediately just rush into the taste. And I like those flavors, and I like West Coast IPAs because they do lean more into the bitterness, and that's exactly what this beer's doing. It's like the finish is, yes, quite bitter. I'd say it's probably more than medium bitter. I'd say it's quite high bitterness.
Okay.
And it's a bit of a dry finish as well. Mm. So it's like, it's quite abrupt. It's like the flavors that, you know, they're all great, they're all nice, but I don't think you have the time to luxuriate and enjoy them and savor them enough. And then it is just like, okay, we're at the finish now. And it is a long lasting finish. It just rests nice, on okay. the palate for a long time. But it would have been nice if like those fruity flavors at the beginning had a little bit more time on the palate. But yeah, it's, you can feel some of that alcohol as well. It's just, I think that doesn't help, like the quite dry finish where it's like, okay, it's a bit harsh, a bit abrupt. But
yes,
it's a nice beer. I just wish, like, some of those, you know, fruity aromas, and you do get them on the initial taste, but the initial taste just goes so quickly, and you're immediate, like, in, like, the end, which is nice, but, you know, if you don't like, you know, more bitter beers, and you want something, like, a bit more fruitier, and, like, you know, more of a New England IPA, yes, the fruitier flavors are there. I'd say this is probably more fruit forward than a lot of West Coast styles, but that window to get them is very short.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. It would be nice if it's got that bit of a longer finish, or not longer finish, but longer middle. Yes. I suppose that sort of bridging part of the beer.
Yeah.
But, I guess a lot of West Coast IPAs, a lot of them are all about that big kind of finish, aren't they? So maybe it's just rushing Absolutely. A bit too much, perhaps.
Yeah.
To kind of get there. Okay, fair. I did just have a quick look at Beak's website, and yes, These Hills is actually this weekend on the 9th and 10th. Okay. Of August, and on their website they do give a good rundown of all the breweries that are there, Verdant being one of them, along with a bunch of UK breweries who'd expect, and then a bunch of international breweries, mostly US, Australian, Japanese and Spanish breweries that are joining them.
Cool.
So yeah, a very good mix of breweries. Which of course is up there by Lewes. I never know how to say it. Is it Lewes? Lewes? Lewes or Lewis? I want to say Lewis, say and then Lewis. I think Lewes. Yeah.
It's probably something weird like leaves.
The W has like no meaning whatsoever in the whole word, or it's completely different or something. Yeah.
It's Lewis.
Absolutely. But this is their beer for the festival. It's got a lovely nose. It's only 5%, so I'm not expecting it to be big, but nice nose, a little bit of fruit on there. More maybe orange, maybe mango, kicking in off the fruit, something slightly more tropical. It's nice and hazy, a little more orange. It's coming over quite bright on the camera. I think my camera's doing this for the last few beers that I've had. It's coming over a bit more bright on the camera than it actually is, a little bit duller. That's a nice flavour. A bit of orange, a little bit of maybe more orange peel than orange. There's this slight acidic kind of note to it.
Yeah.
But it's very light. Very light and very bright in terms of the sort of the initial hit that you get. Very refreshing. A little wet. But definitely that slightly maybe more riper mango, a little bit of orange peel, maybe a touch of some other kind of zest in there as well. Maybe a little bit of like lemon in there. I can't remember the hops it said. Something about a tropical cascade and Idaho 7. And I'm not getting anything big and creamy or anything big and tropical from it. The flavours are quite not pared back, but they're pretty light in terms of kind of what I'm getting. Unlike your beer, where the finish kicks in too early, I think with this actually there isn't much of a finish.
Gotcha. So
the initial flavours are allowed to just sort of peter out almost, and there's not a huge flavour profile going on past those initial flavours. Which I think
like
for a
wishy-washy finish, and it's just like
it is and it isn't, because you get that little bit of fruit and that little bit of flavour, but it does actually. I'm getting the Idaho 7 a little bit more now, and that's sticking around that little bit. So there is a touch of that kind of creaminess coming through that I think the Idaho 7 brings a little bit of, and that sticks around a little bit. But again, it kind of fades quite naturally, but without having anything else happening to it. So it's like, here are the flavours. Here's your mango. Here's that little bit of creaminess that's cutting through. Sure, my initial flavour kind of like missed the mark on a couple of those bits. But everything is happening in quite a quick, contained element. So, like your beer, the initial flavour is like, here it is. Yours goes on to something else. This doesn't. It sort of just goes, okay, let's just slowly peter out. Which is fine. And actually, for a festival beer, is probably a very good thing. You know, have a third, have a half of something like this, drink it quite quickly, move on to the next kind of beer. You're getting a lot of that flavour in that initial sort of sip. So it's inviting you, wanting you to continue to drink it, sip it, and kind of, you know, you bang through a half or bang through a third quite swiftly on this. I will be interested to see how this lasts across a whole tin, and if things start to emerge, you know, as I say, that's like creaminess, a little bit of a longer flavour is starting to happen, but it's not much at all, really, and that's not to say that it's not good, and it's not bad. The flavours are nice that I'm experiencing. It's just quite short lived.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And as with most beers, I'll drink it incredibly quickly, probably.
It's one of those where it's like, I think the perfect... Oh, there is no perfect beer, but the best beers are the ones that like kind of take you on a journey and everything is still quite harmonious.
Yes.
Some beers are just like, it's like complete... Like, it's almost whiplash how quickly they change from one thing to another. Or... as you say, in your case, it's kind of more one note. Maybe it's a nice note, but it may be just like one note. Whereas, like, I think the best beers are just like, okay, it starts like this, and then these other elements come into it, and then it all gets wrapped up in a nice bow, and it's like more of a, you know, symphonic journey.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
With it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But now that I think now that I'm more accustomed to the bitterness on this one, I think I'm picking up more on those fruity flavours, and it's like that
nice.
Initial taste is lasting a bit longer, where I'm able to pick out the fruits and, you know, more of those esters and more of the pininess that even starts in like the middle of the flavour, which is good. So, yeah, we'll see how it develops over the
brilliant
podcast.
Nice, good. And we'll return to these beers towards the end, exactly as Lucy says, see how they develop and see whether those flavours change much at all. But should we jump into some games for this week? Video games. I think last week we talked about one game. Maybe.
This
week
so
there's
long
slightly
ago.
More.
I can't remember. Yes, Wheel World, yeah. I'm like, what before, is it
on before we kick into other games, have you finished Wheel World?
Yes, I think when we spoke about it last, I was just mopping up some of the achievements. And yeah, I'm done with it now. I've had my fill. I really enjoyed it. We talked about like the kind of issues we had with it, but it wasn't enough to like sour my experience overall.
Yes.
I enjoyed it, and I think it's got me back into playing some more games.
Nice.
Now. Yeah, so
good.
It was a kind of nice, relaxing, but still engagement of the brain kind of video game that I needed.
Yeah, no, good. The day after we talked about it, I went and finished it ultimately. Played that last race that I had left, and then actually did what I suppose you would consider a bit of a third act, but a very short kind of final run for the game. So yeah, ran through the rest of it. But I think none of my thoughts changed with that sort of final bit. But yeah, enjoyed that game.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of one that would be very easy to pick up and be like, cool, I'll just try and play some, you know, try and beat my score on this race, or try and beat Tom's score on one of these races, or get the letters and try and finish first. It does have that replayability to it, definitely.
Yeah,
I think if other games
just like DLC dropped into it, like here's a new area, and just like I don't need to relearn mechanics, I don't need to relearn how to do stances or like a Souls game or something like that. It's just like, yeah. It's like riding a bike. I could just hop into it again.
Absolutely. Or there's an extra 20, 30 lone wolf races around, but rather than it just being a sort of a point-to-point race where they're taking you through a road, actually this race has a couple of extra elements to it. So there is letters along the race. And that's a bit more difficult because you encounter the lone wolf cyclists kind of on their run, so you can pick them up at any point. So you have to be a bit dynamic in terms of where things generated and that kind of thing. But something like that would absolutely get me to go back in. They go, here's another 50, another 20 lone wolf races. But perfect. That's great. I get to just go back into the original map or the second map or something and just race through the map rather than being like, cool, go to the place, do the race. If this is just cycling around, naturally picking up races. I think I saw someone almost compare the idea, or I can't remember exactly what it is, but Burnout was brought into sort of question.
Okay.
You know, Burnout Paradise, where you can just drive around the city and pick up races and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And actually, a little bit more of that may have kept me there a little bit longer. You know, not pushing through to get to the next race, to progress the story, to get the rep, to beat the boss, to that sort of thing. Like, if there was a few more bits, and I think I expressed this when we were sort of, you know, talking about it, there's a little bit more in that world would have just kept me in there that little bit longer.
For sure. Yeah. It feels like a couple more mechanics and a few more ideas, and then definitely take it up a tier as an experience. But
absolutely. Nice. So you said it sort of helped you or kind of pushed you to get back into playing anything. What else have you been playing, Lucy?
I've dabbled in things. I played, I think this was even, was it before Wheel World? I played a bit of Hitman 3, because I still haven't finished it. Because I'm a sicko when I do, like, oh, we're turning off the mini-map and turning off, you know, all the hints and stuff like that. And
you've got to memorize every corner, every room. Yep.
Yes. And it's like, I got probably about halfway through Hitman 3, and I was like, I was just going to dip back into it, and it was like, I think it was, okay, I started at like 9 o'clock, and I didn't finish the mission until like midnight. And it was just like, yeah, because I'm a sicko. And it was just like, I was just like, that is a game that I can just pick up because it is just like muscle memory at this point, because I know like how, you know, all the controls, because I played probably about 600 hours of Hitman across the trilogy. I was just like, that's just such a good game. And it's like, I want to play more, but it's like, I know the kind of hours that I sink into this. And so let's steer away from that. I've been dipping back into Tony Hawk.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, I like 3, but my heart is with 4. My heart and my soul is with 4. And then I was just like, I think I unlocked like 70% of the levels in 3. Maybe I've unlocked all of them at this point, but it's just like, I played up to about 70% of the levels.
Okay.
I was like, I just want to play 4. Because 4 is great.
Fair.
And I played the first level of 4. And I was just like, this is so good. It's just, I think 4, I know everyone loves 3, but the, like, the fact that they've, you know, you can't, you're not doing like the kind of mission structure that was in 4 originally, and it is just 2-minute kind of time-based, like, you know, time-based, I guess, levels or whatever, over 2 minutes, it makes you appreciate more how well designed those levels are, even though they were just meant for like free roaming skating. It still really works as like, just, you know, as a 2-minute time challenge, and it's just thinking, yeah, the 4 is great. Like, there's a reason that 4 is my favorite, not just because it was just like the most stupid MTV Jackass kind of like era of that kind of thing. I guess Tony Hawk Underground was probably even more so of that.
Yeah, like, I just thinking exactly the same thing. Yeah.
But you know, I think 4 was just a better designed game. Thug was a bit more open in those levels, because those were, could you get off the board in the first one?
I know. No.
You could in the second one in Thug. I can't. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Get off the, yeah. But it's just like the levels were really open in Thug, whereas like Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4, they were still like somewhat self-contained, and it was just like, yeah, these are really well made levels, and it's like, I only played like the first one, the college or whatever, and it's just like, man, this is so good. I started South of Midnight.
Oh.
And I really want to get back into that, because like just the like voice acting and stuff like that, and we don't get enough games that are like set in like the deep south.
No, absolutely.
Like, the only one that I can think of in recent memory was like Norco, and that's like that was like one of my favorite games from a few years ago, just like the tone and setting. This one probably won't have quite as many as the like kind of overt political undertones. It's probably a bit more like, what was that, like Kenner Bridges Spirits kind of game. That's, I only played through like the first opening bit, but that's the kind of sort of vibe that I'm getting from it.
Yeah, it's a bit more like fantastical, isn't it? Like giant frogs, you know, big beasts kind of roaming the land and that kind of thing. Yeah,
where it's like, I'm sure Kenner probably had some kind of like undertones about the environment or something like that, but it's probably like, you know, not in your face as much as like Norco, where it's like capitalism equals bad, kind of, you know, in your face. But yeah, I want to get back to that, because it just seems cool, you know. Yes, very fantastical and
kind of
Disney-esque, but it's just like, seems like it might be cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of the one game that has come out this year from Microsoft Studios that is the one that has kind of tried to, that I've thought about jumping into a Game Pass, for a month. Avowed held me for a little bit, but didn't do much. I haven't played Doom, whatever the new Dark Age is.
I forgot that came out.
I haven't touched that yet, but South of Midnight is the one that's kind of called to me. And I think some of that comes from the slightly, and I don't know what the FPS is on the animation, but it's very, like, it feels like the animation has a slight, not necessarily claymation kind of,
it does,
it's in that, like, 30 frames or 25 frames per second. It feels like it's a little bit stilted, like they've taken a very specific aesthetic to this game and kind of applied it to make you feel like it's a little different from everything else.
I'm not sure if that's quite in the game, but as I say, I only played like the first act, which was mainly story. I'm not sure about the gameplay, if it is like in that kind of, like, as you say, 25 per second, like, kind of almost claymation look. I think there are settings where you can turn that off, and I'm just thinking that's kind of like, I understand it, absolutely, especially someone like me, I don't know, you know, like motion sickness and stuff like that.
Sure.
This has got a lot of accessibility options, so I understand why it's there, but I don't know what it is in combat, because I haven't got to that point yet, but in terms of like, I absolutely left it on for like the cutscenes and everything, because it's like, this is part of the character of the game and it looks fantastic. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to getting more into that.
Nice.
But yeah, I hope it, I really do hope it like deals with, you know, things like, I mean, at the start of the game, this isn't really a spoiler because it's the first thing, it's like, okay, there's a storm coming through and you're just thinking like Hurricane Katrina and how like people on the peripheries of society are just left to deal with that stuff. So I do hope it gets into, you know, more stuff like, you know, just the political nature of like being in the Deep South and the racism there and stuff like that, and I hope it gets into that stuff. But I think it, I mean, it's made by Compulsion Games, who are they Canadian? Where it's like, obviously they would have consulted people and stuff like that, but I don't know how close to home it is for them, because I'm sure they're like very removed from that part of the USA.
They are. They're Montreal. Montreal based.
There you go. Yeah. And it's like, you can take inspiration from anywhere. It doesn't preclude them from making a game about the Deep South. But when you think of, like, I don't know, Norco, it feels like that was very personal, you know? Which, so, I mean, yeah, it's great that people, you know, games aren't being made like that. It's like, okay, why don't we take that upon ourselves, educate ourselves, and make it about that, which is also great. But it's like, there is a bit of a disconnect. So I'll be interested to see how deep it goes into those kind of things.
I will say, from what I played of We Happy Few, which was their previous game, which was like a 70s set UK-based game, there was definitely a bit of a disconnect. And very much more a caricature vibe to the characters,
but
that were kind of in that
caricature
game.
What
to be fair, we are.
Differently.
but I could and this is why sort of South of Midnight interests me that a little bit, to sort of see. I didn't know they were Canadian, but I knew that they weren't Southern US. That from what I experienced with We Happy Few, I was definitely interested in being like, how are they pulling this off? How authentic are the characters? Yes, it is that bit more fantastical. And from what we'd seen of not E3 trailers and game, I can't remember what the fuck it's called, Jeff Keighley's Fun Time Christmas event thing.
The Game Awards,
thank you, perfect. What we'd seen from all of those kinds of things, you know, there's that kind of sequence where you are running around a bit of a decrepit and abandoned town being chased by an alligator, you know, giant alligator kind of thing. So there's definitely a, not necessarily a caricature kind of element to it, but everything is a little bit bigger than kind of real life. And I think that makes sense coming from sort of We Happy Few, which was a little bit more character driven, maybe, or at least you experienced it NPC wise. You're constantly encountering other characters kind of within We Happy Few, and it very much was a bit of a kind of like strung out British cop who wants to take, you know, these aren't drugs, it's whatever the thing was in We Happy Few. It's not drugs, but it is kind of thing, and everyone's on it, and why not? I'm really interested to see how they've, you know, what they've done with this ultimately.
Yeah, because it is based on like southern folklore, so that's how they're getting, you know, the very fantastical elements about it. But yeah, I would expect with being bought by Microsoft and having that bigger budget, that bigger kind of reach, they probably would have consulted enough people to make it a bit more authentic than, oh, this Tetley tea and which I don't mind, you know. Everyone should take the mick out of the British. We are very ridiculous people.
Oh, absolutely. We're definitely open. I think the British are very open for that as well. Yeah. Like, we're more than happy for people to take the piss out of us. I'm reading, well, I've just had a quick look at the Compulsion Games Wikipedia. It looks like, from what they're saying, is that they started work on South of Midnight in October of 2021. So roughly a four-year cycle on the game.
Okay. Yeah.
But they doubled their staff.
Right.
From the staff that worked on We Happy Few. Big change.
The acquisition was between then and now.
Yes. Yeah. Well, happened. So the acquisition and Microsoft announced it had acquired Compulsion Games in 2018. To become part of Microsoft Studios. So We Happy Few fully released, because it was a early access game, fully released in August of 2018.
Immediately after they were acquired?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a couple of months after.
I thought they were a bit later. Because I remember when they announced, like, okay, we bought this guy's, like not LucasArts. What are they called? Double Fine.
To be fair, just
like okay, interesting, that's been a while then. It's always one of those things that it's just like it's the Damocles sword just hanging over everybody's head of like, when are Microsoft gonna shut this team?
Is it the moment? Absolutely.
It's depressing to think. I can't even imagine what it'd be like being one of those studios. And you're just thinking that it's like, you think Double Fine are safe just because that would look so bad optically, not because of what they're doing or if Microsoft even care about that studio. It's just so sad to think. If Compulsion Games were shut down tomorrow, I wouldn't be surprised. No one would be surprised.
Yeah, and it's kind of, you know, Microsoft as a company, huge push into AI. They are a business which is more about not necessarily subscription based, but recurring kind of payments. You know, Windows as a product is continuously being updated and made redundant. You know, Windows 10 is going to ultimately stop receiving updates, I think, in October later this year. And Xbox as a product seems out of step with Microsoft as a company, how much they might be a bit more independently run potentially is something that you would hope, but from the recent layoffs again is probably not actually true. And I could see, after the sort of the acquisition spree from Microsoft and PlayStation, and then other bigger companies, Embracer, which has gone all to shit, and other companies as well, which had big acquisition sprees kind of seven odd years ago now, might and hopefully potentially start going the way of Games Media, which again had a big acquisition spree. I know Digital Foundry announced yesterday that they were going independent from IGN's parent company, and I'm like, I didn't even know Eurogamer, who owned Digital Foundry, had been bought out by Zapf Davis or whatever the company is that owns kind of IGN. Like,
same with Rock Paper Shotgun, because a few of their chief editors were just let go unceremoniously a year ago, maybe more. Yeah, so I'm surprised it took Digital Foundry this far and this long to do that, because I think they were already spinning out maybe, I think, even before the IGN acquisition, because I'm sure they had some Patreon things before. So yeah, I'm surprised it took them this long to break free.
Yeah,
they'll get a lot of support, because that's a very not niche, but it's niche enough for the nerds.
Digital Foundry, absolutely.
60 FPS. Is this 60 FPS or is it not? And the guys are good work over there. They're very knowledgeable, and they do enough, things that are niche enough, is this random N64 game going to run on this random piece of tech at 60 FPS if somebody homebrewed a mod for it? So yeah,
absolutely.
I like what they do over there.
Three people will play it, but 300,000 people will watch the video that Digital Foundry have put out about it. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I want to know about the shaders in Microsoft Flight Simulator. Will I play it? No. But I want to know about those shaders.
How do the dinosaurs in the Jurassic Park Microsoft Flight Simulator DLC look? I will never play this game, but I want to know what it looks like.
I want to know how many scales are on that T-Rex.
Absolutely.
And what resolution they've been portrayed in.
You could see someone like Compulsion Games, and I think South of Midnight came out to quite good reviews, and a lot of people have enjoyed their experience with it. But it's a weird moment in the industry where you could kind of see Compulsion Games going, with what's happening at Microsoft and within Xbox, kind of going, cool, actually, we could shrink back down to the team size we were with We Happy Few and go back to being independent. And
it might be necessary. Or even just out of the Sauron's eye of Microsoft, where it's like, oh, this team's small enough. They're just like, oh, we just write off that. That's fine. Yeah. That's 10 people bought Game Pass, and you're paying for all these people's salaries. You're fine if you're under 100 people in team size. If you're 101, Sauron's eye is gonna get you, and it's just the whole team's gone.
It's a bad day when that is, that would potentially be the barometer for whether you exist or not.
I think it.
We really need one more hire, but we cannot make that hire because that will tip us over the budget that we're allowed to fucking have. Mm-hmm.
Phil Spencer knows we exist.
Oh no!
It's
he's worn a We Happy Few T-shirt. We're done.
Phil Spencer's coming to play our new build of our game. Yeah, we're done. We preferred when it was just we're not here.
Absolutely.
Funny when I was it was a news story. I think someone spoke to John Romero. And it was a case of I can't remember who the company who owned, or is at least funding, Daikatana. At the same time, they were funding, was it System Shock, or was it? It was a game by Looking Glass Studios. Was it Deus Ex? It might have been Deus Ex. And they basically said, okay, these guys are funding us both. I should really know the company, because it's I've read half the Doom books about Doom and Quake and all that, but it was a case where it was we're at Looking Glass, we're just getting along with our game, we need 6 more months to make this game Deus Ex actually good, from it being a disaster to actually being one of the best games of all time. And apparently they used to go down to was it Austin, Texas, where John Romero's studio was, and it's where he's making Daikatana, which historically was a mess, but the they got them so drunk that every time that they went down there, that it was just like, yeah, we're not going to come up to Looking Glass Studio and look at what's going on because we've just had too many heavy nights down here in Texas. Don't worry about it. You keep working on it. It's just like, that's theind of culture we need to bring back, where you just get execs drunk enough to just to write a check and not worry about it.
Well, like ultimately, in a way, and this is, I suppose, one of the difficulty points with the gaming industry, is that the people making all of the money currently are very much into e-commerce and those kinds of areas, and potentially specific products and specific kinds of companies, but they're not divesting their interest. They're not investing and putting their money into other things. So you have someone like Microsoft as a business. It was like, cool, we want to buy one of the biggest publishers, Acti Blizzard King. We want to buy that. That's going to come in as part of our thing. Great, we've done that now. We've spent X billions of pounds. Let's get rid of thousands and thousands of fucking people over a 3-year period, potentially. Ra and Microsoft as a company, yes, they might have the same amount of money as individually Jeff Bezos, potentially a lot more, to be fair, but per person in the upper management, a lot less than some of the more wealthy people that have a lot of kind of money. And they go, well, actually, as a business, because of capitalism, we have to show even a 1% kind of increase
Yeah,
in
year
our
over year growth.
year-on-year profits and growth. And actually, the way that we can work it is that we can get rid of a bunch of people now, but still deliver the same product because actually it's 95% complete, and we can get rid of 100 people, get them off our books. The remaining 20 people can finish that 5%. We can ship it, and then we can sell it. And actually, the books look like, sure, we've lost a lot of people. We've made all of this money from selling this product. So suddenly, there's our 1% increase in the company, because we're just juggling things constantly. Rather than an actual investment, like not philanthropic, but some kind of investment where somebody comes along and goes, I've just got £1 billion, mate. It means nothing to me. I've made so much fucking money, it doesn't matter. And there are people out there, there's absolutely people out there that exist, that is the case for them, that is the truth for them. But they're not the people investing in video
No,
games, unfortunately.
they're not. Yeah, they're investing in, because they're not doing it altruistically. They're doing it to make money.
Absolutely.
They're doing
Absolutely.
it in the next ChatGPT or something.
Yes. Or the next phase of what they believe to be societal evolution, and Bezos and Elon Musk putting a lot of their money into just going to space.
Yeah.
Sure. Fine. The
Building a
world's
new
fucked.
clear
Let's
reactor on the
go to
moon, like, that will go well.
space.
Yeah,
Yes.
it's hard to, I mean, it makes the like the console wars even more stupid now, because it's like, it's hard to bat for anyone now. It's like, what are these
Very much.
companies doing? They're laying off like your favorite studios and closing favorite studios and stuff like that. I mean, the console wars died a while ago, but, well, for most people, but it's just like, can you imagine like going to war for any of these companies now? At
Absolutely.
least like in the early 2000s, they pulled the wool over our eyes and thought it's like, yeah, for the gamers. But it's just like, now more than ever, it is truly just about money and not about art or
Absolutely.
creating good games, you
Absolutely.
know?
Yep. Very much. Very much. And if anyone's interested in listening further about these kinds of things, and they don't already listen to Remap Radio, they've done the last couple of episodes. Patrick Klepek did a good episode with Kat Bailey about the sort of the state of Nintendo. They've been talking recently about a lot of kind of the industry and sort of where it is, and those kinds of things. Very good to sort of step into that kind of place to understand where we are, I suppose, as an
You should listen
industry
to that,
as such. And I literally sat here in my PlayStation t-shirt, sort of repping repping the brand as such. Whilst being
wrong
like,
with that. It's just like, it's not our fault that these companies give money to the Israeli government to kill, you know, Gazans. It's not our
absolutely
fault. You know?
Yeah,
I mean, we just want to play fun games. We just want to play South of Midnight. You know?
Very much. And the difficulty with that is to try and divest yourself from every possible company that is enabling that is an impossible task.
No.
It's an impossible task when your government is just enabling that. Like, cool, I removed myself from capitalism completely. I've bought nothing. I own
naked
nothing.
In the forest.
Exactly.
I've gone with ethical
mortgage company number one, and I know that they're not doing it. That's it. That's the only thing I can do. I own a house. I live in. I rent
and
said.
You have to live in a cave.
Live in the tree. Just climb it and live in the tree. Naked forever, only eating berries. And it's so difficult in the in the world that we live in to try and get away from
that. It's impossible.
That.
It's impossible. Yeah. That's why it's like, you know, choose your battles. It's like, if you want to play this game that's made by Microsoft because you just want to be happy, go do it. You can't have the weight on your shoulders and be like, oh, you're supporting genocide or anything. It's like, you're not doing that willingly, you know what I mean? It's like, but there's only so much we can do. Like, yes, boycott this, boycott that, do what you feel is best for yourself. But it's not, it's like, I'm not going to be like, oh, you played a Ubisoft game, you support Grapus. I can't be like that, because it's like,
well, it's,
I'm probably doing the same in some, I probably bought, I don't know, an orange that was, you know, made in Atlanta or something like that, or a peach.
It's a Sicilian orange, but it's been taken over by the Israelis, essentially, basically, and they're just to control the market on Sicilian oranges. It's interesting in what's happening, and maybe we'll touch on this in a later date when Adila's joined us. It's interesting what's happening in the state of itch and Steam at the moment with the removal of a lot of games. The NSFW kind of tag has essentially been removed from those platforms because of an Australian pressure group, a conservative pressure group, essentially
when
said
did
to
we listen to Australians.
Fucking who knows? Who knows?
Especially
they're all fucking convicts,
games.
Mate. What's going on? Like, they've all broken.
They ban everything down there, anyway.
They do, to be fair. Well, yeah, like, absolutely.
Katamari Damacy, what's this? It's like rolling up the earth. Ban it.
Yeah. It suggests that Aboriginals exist. Let's get rid of it. you know, the payment processes have put this pressure onto these companies. But no one has had enough pressure to suggest to payment processors that the war in Gaza is a worthy enough cause that they will stop any money going to companies, you know, progressing Israel in this fucking genocide. And
it's nuts that this is the battle. In Australia can just cripple an entire, like, kind of community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it plays into the current kind of world, not necessarily new world order. Let's not quite go down that route. But the, you know, slightly more conservative leaning current governments that are in place, and how this very much plays into that playbook.
Please think about the children nonsense when it's never about the children.
Absolutely.
It's about silencing and eradicating.
Absolutely. And very much here in the UK, those the asylum hotels that have been targeted in recent weeks, a lot of that has stemmed out of, well, an asylum seeker, you know, potentially, and I cannot speak to this, but has been accused of a rape. And again, let's think of the children, let's think of the people that are living here, let's do this. And there's that kind of potentially a good faith argument made in very much bad faith.
Yes.
And jumped upon to be like, everyone should be against, everyone should be against this thing, and everyone is against it. You know, 99.9% of people are against that thing, but it's used to push a completely different narrative. Yes,
completely different agenda, and it's just a smokescreen. And it's so apparent to, well, it should be apparent to a lot of people, but it isn't for others, because some people only see that smokescreen and not what's beyond it. And it's just, have you not learned? Has history not told you?
We've only had 150, 200 years of recorded modern history that everything is just essentially repeating continuously.
It's like, yeah, it's crazy. You just think, we do not learn.
No, we don't. Learn. We absolutely don't. But
what have you played?
Let's talk about games. What have I played? Let's pull ourselves out of the mire of fucking shit that we live in continuously.
And Dale's not even here, and I've just had his, all I can hear is him saying capitalism in my in the back of my head, and it's like he's not even here. It's like he's the puppet master.
Yes, absolutely. He's pulling. Master, he's in the car. He's in the car, just fucking pulling up and down.
In the middle of Canada with this signal. He's still the puppet master.
What have I played? What have I played?
A polar bear.
Yes. Well, talking about the end of the world, I've been playing End Zone 2, which is a post-apocalyptic city builder game.
Oh, okay. Right.
I talked about End Zone several years ago now, as a game that ultimately I didn't massively get on with as a city builder. And End Zone 2 has started in a similar kind of vein and is a very, very slow burn.
Right.
But I can see improvements. I can see additions. And I've played maybe... Oh, let's actually... How many hours have I played? Look, tell me on the store page. Write review. I don't want to write review. Let's go back to my library. Yes, I played 3 hours.
July.
There we go. I played 3 hours so far. Feels like I played more. Absolutely feels like I played more than that. But they have added a few additional points, which is holding my interest past the idea that End Zone 2 felt very much... End Zone, the original game, felt very much like a city builder which was constantly fighting against you. You know, like something like Frostpunk, where you have those freezes, you have that weather simulation, which is like, this thing's coming, you better prepare for it. End Zone 2, similarly, is like, here's some acid rain, and that's going to affect the land and what you can do with the land and the water and then how many resources that you can kind of get and those kinds of things. And that's fine. It's a bit of a limitation in terms of progress, and understandably they need something to just, without you just being like, cool, we've remade civilization in time. There's going to always be those kinds of points within these games to sort of push you. But the thing I'm enjoying, actually, with End Zone is that they kind of split the gameplay between the city builder element and then this kind of exploration sort of element. So you have a truck, and if you progress enough through the, well, through the tutorial or straight into the sandbox kind of mode, the truck can do what they call expeditions. So you can go along, you find a building, you can loot it, just take some stuff, or you go on an expedition where a character gets out of the van and it takes you into this little vignette of the area, and you can basically click on a bunch of stuff in the map. And within that area, a lot of stuff will be, you know, trash can. Cool, there's like some wire in the trash can, and I will take the wire back with me. Or there's a plastic bottle, and I'll take, or some water, and I will take that back with me. But there's some elements where there is a little bit more thought behind what you're doing. So you might find a chest, but it's locked. So you need a lockpicking kit. Well, I don't have a lockpicking kit, so I need to explore some more and then get somewhere. And something will give me a lockpicking kit. Cool, now I can go back and open that chest. Or this thing needs a blowtorch to burn it off. Or this thing needs an axe to open it up. So there's this element of tools in these expeditions as well, which is different from the tools that you need in the city builder kind of currency economy. You know, you need X amount of tools to be able to craft the things to keep your people alive. So there is an extra level which has been keeping me in end zone that little bit more. Unlike the first game, which I played like 10, 15 hours of. But bounced off of pretty quickly. I think end zone 2, even with that sort of 3 hours played, is holding me enough that things have changed enough. It's not just a replication of end zone in a slightly different style. It's changed enough so far. The thing that does bother me slightly, and I think this bothered me with the first game, is the aesthetic.
It's very grim.
Well, it's grim, but so incredibly detailed.
Yeah, it is. It
feels like my eyes are like, oh my god, there's so much texture. There's too much texture happening within this. Like, every bush is individually moving in the wind. That's fucking, like, it's brilliant. Technologically, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
But it's so much to take in as I'm kind of looking at the screen.
I was about to say, it's like, like, would you prefer, like, a, you know, a thing that's, like, post-apocalyptic, but it's got more of a, like, a happy... like kind of spin on it, where it's like, okay, yes, this is the end of the world, but we're kind of like regenerating, I don't know, coral reefs and stuff like that, rather than worried radiation zones and stuff like that. But yes, it is insanely detailed.
I think I don't know if you remember a game called Banished, which is who knows, must be nearly 10 years old now, which was a city builder where ultimately you were a small group of people who set up a settlement by yourself. And Banished was quite brutal in that there could just be random accidents. You know, ultimately, you've built a mine and the miners caved in and killed three people. So suddenly you're three people down.
Jesus.
Or this disease has just ripped through your community. And End Zone 2 has a lot of the same mechanics as Banished. And Banished as a game for me was brilliant. I really enjoyed it because it was different to a lot of other city builders at the time.
Yeah.
I think a lot of games that have come out since are pulling on those same kind of strings, but giving its own sort of aesthetic to it and giving it its own sort of vibe.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly it's not diseases, it's more, it's radiation that's kind of running around and those kinds of things. But actually, I'd compare it a little bit more and... this sort of tells you how I feel about that aesthetic and whether it's happy, to SteamWorld Build. So if you remember, SteamWorld Build had the two separate elements where you had the city builder, but then you had this like subterranean, almost dungeon keeper-esque kind of gameplay kind of to it. Very much within the SteamWorld kind of aesthetic. Not grim, not dark, more jovial. It's robots, it's colourful, it has a very vibrant aesthetic to it. But I feel almost the same about End Zone 2 currently as I did about SteamWorld Build. Like, great, I built a city, and I've explored a little bit in the undergrowth, but there's not much more to do than this. And I think I'd get to a point with, unlike Frostpunk, or Frostpunk 2, which had not necessarily a story element to it, but felt like there was progress. It had the whole idea of this council made up of different groups of people within the settlement, and that changed in terms of numbers depending on what group was popular at the time, who followed them, how many people sat on the council, where the decisions went, who went against you or with you, and those kinds of things. That felt much more dynamic in terms of a city builder feeling more alive, let's say, rather than just city builder, build the city, time has passed and you have built some more, cool, natural thing has happened. Okay, great, and I've overcome that and I've done that kind of thing. And I think with my city builders now, Frostpunk 2 has kind of set the bar more recently in terms of I need something a little bit more in-depth. Depth, and it cannot be necessarily this city builder and then other thing, exploration, digging.
This is spread too thin across? It's trying to do multiple mechanics to stand out, but it's spread too thin across both of those elements. Would you just prefer the one focused?
I think I would. I think I would prefer the one focused more in depth thing. But that's what Endzone kind of gave me as an original, you know, as the first game that came out, and that didn't quite hit for me. So I think there needs to be something else. There needs to be some thing that sets you apart. But that doesn't mean it can't be outside of the city builder element. It doesn't need to be that exploration thing. It doesn't need to be a combat thing. It doesn't need to be, you know, a digging thing. It doesn't need to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
But something that actually affects the city builder element and actually does take you deeper into that city builder element is definitely something I'm looking for that bit more.
So do you think it would have been, if you were to say, okay, someone said we're going to make Endzone 2, do you think you would have focused more on what Endzone 1 did but refine it more? Or would you have gone for this route where it's like, okay, we're going to kind of branch a bit?
I think, like, you know, I can see why they've done this. Potentially, you know, this game's been years in the making, I would think, you know, from Endzone. But Frostpunk very much was like, we've got our city builder game. How do we enhance the gameplay of a city builder? Yes. And Frostpunk 2 is the result of that. Endzone feels like it's gone, cool, what else can we put in?
Yeah,
and
I find that with a lot of sequels where it's like, oh, instead of just maintaining the current scope of the first game, but refining things and making things better and taking on the feedback, and it's just like, okay, this was what was wrong with it, this is what was wrong with it. We're going to just hone in on that idea, but make it better, make everything 10% better. It feels like they open the scope more and just like say, why don't we make this 50% bigger instead of... I find that with a lot of sequel, and who knows, maybe that comes from, like, I don't know, this is probably more of an indie developer, maybe, but sometimes I think a lot of that comes from, like, publishers with, like, bigger studios, and it's like, oh, we've made the first game, we've made money from it, let's make the scope bigger instead of just really refining what the thing is. And I find that so frustrating with, like, this modern era of video games. Instead of better, they go bigger. It's like,
yes, very much. I think Endzone 2 is the combination of that. You know, I remember that Endzone had, as something like City Skylines does, it's got multiple views, right? So you can kind of change a view to see production or population or those kinds of things. And I haven't come across that in Endzone 2 yet. I've been able to change the view in terms of, like, looking at the ground, what's happening, in the, you know, having nothing as an overview as such, having it highlighted where natural materials are or where inhabitable kind of spaces are. You know, these are mountains, these are forests, this is plains, this is water, which you can see from the aesthetic of the game, versus looking at, like, pathing of characters or looking at kind of where is good on resources and where is not quite as good on resources. And Endzone 2 actually wants to lean into that a little bit. So some of the buildings that you produce and can build are like, we've got faster production if we're built next to building 1 and building 2. And you're like, well, I built building 1 over here because that's where the resource was, and I built building 2 over here because that's where the resource was. So now building 3, which benefits from being next to that one, but it also benefits additionally from being next to that one, can only be next to one of them. So they've lent in a little bit to sort of looking at going, how can we enhance the city builder element and give you a bit more strategy about how you're laying stuff out, but without giving you the overviews, without giving you the tools, I think, necessarily to optimize what you're trying to do on a city builder kind of level. And it feels like Endzone 2 is a city builder, but not aimed at people wanting a city builder experience. Someone wanting a bit more of a settlement. Like, let's get the settlement kind of running, and then we're going to build another settlement, because that's another thing that introduces it's you could have multiple settlements within the map that you're working on. But let's explore. Let's find the next place to settle. Let's explore some more and take some resources and do some expeditions, and then explore another place that we can settle again. And then what's the routes between those kinds of settlements that we're trying to sort of establish? This one is great for doing this, and this one is great for doing that. So obviously the natural progression is to switch the things to make sure that the overproduction of this is given to those, and the overproduction of that is given to here.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of expansion, absolute expansion in terms of scope and creating that. But yeah, without drilling down into really refining what makes the first game good and competent.
Yeah.
I'm just going, great, we've got the first game. We'll make it bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is why it's such a bugbear for me. Like, so stuff like what I've heard from, like, I don't know, like the second God of War, where it's like they just made it bigger. It's just like, you were onto something, and then it's like you didn't take on any of the feedback, you know what I mean, of like getting an editor. It was just like, no, we're just gonna make the story bigger, longer, and more annoying. And it's like, okay.
Yeah,
there are very few games now that I can even think of that just like hone in an idea. It's like, we're onto something, let's refine it. I think like maybe even Hitman. It's like with every, there was Hitman 1, 2, and 3. With every one of them, I don't think like the levels were like got bigger and more over time. You know what I mean? Like there were some that were just like maybe even smaller than they were in the first game. Some were bigger, some were smaller, but it was like, okay, we're going to refine these mechanics, refine the gameplay, tighten things up a bit. And then by like 3, and they introduced retroactively all the improvements that they made in by 3, they patched like the first and second game to make it on par. It's just like, why can't we do that more? You know,
yeah.
I've got a good idea. Like, instead of just being like, we need more things on the mini map, why can't you be just like, let's make the things on the mini map better?
yes, absolutely.
That? We have less of them, but they're better. And it's just like,
yeah, no, very much. That very much feels like End Zone 2 currently.
Yeah.
I seem to think that End Zone released in early access, but I'm not sure on that. But End Zone 2 it has just come out as a fully finished experience, which is great for the studio that have made it. You know, absolutely sort of bash it out and put it out into the world. And there will be a very much group of people that will enjoy this dynamic between sort of the city builder, you know, city builder light almost, although
like
it does feel
state of decay, like how you were describing it, like the kind of building your settlement, building your city, and then going out and on expeditions and exploring it. It's sort of like state of decay ish if it was like 2D and top down.
I agree. But I think even state of decay had a, you know, to get to the point where you were doing expeditions and sending people out, that the stakes were a lot bigger in State of Decay.
Yes, absolutely.
End Zone 2, that currently the stakes don't feel that big.
Right, yeah.
And I would imagine the more I play, I know that there's other settlements out there, so there's a bit of combat and there's a bit of battles. You know, I've already picked up some weapons for my vehicle that I install and those kinds of things. So there's that element to it. Hasn't popped in after 3 hours yet though, so it does feel, and the tutorial feels slow. It very much feels like you've never touched a city builder before, and it's taking you through those steps. And I did think to myself, oh, do I just jump into the sandbox and just learn as I go? I know enough about city. I've played
your
fucking
season.
Loads of city builders. I know enough about them
every week
to kind of do it. But I think, but 90% of people who are going to play this game are going to start in the tutorial. So have the same experience as those people and see exactly how that's kind of running
video
through.
Video games,
so
when you're designing them, you have to be like, this is somebody's first game that they've ever picked up. Which is, tough to manage and find a
very much
easy point, because when people like skip a tutorial and it's like something as in depth as a city builder, it's not like a platformer, it's like, okay, I can pretty much figure it out on my own. Where it's like there could be some other elements that are just different from other city builders, let's say. And then people are like, I don't understand this. Like, did you play this?
Yeah,
tutorial?
Very much. No. Yep. Like, I missed, yeah. I don't know how this does it. It's like, if you'd have just played five minutes more of the tutorial, you know exactly how this works. Yeah.
We're very impatient, us gamers.
Very much. Very much. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, unfortunately, for Endzone 2, it doesn't quite hit that balance of quite enough speed through the through the tutorial, especially when it puts you into the research mode, because the research mode takes ages. You know, like, you have to research this thing. I'm like, cool, I'll research the thing. Oh, okay, cool. It's going to take me a good 10 minutes of real-world time to research the thing. Okay, I'll go and do some exploration.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, I was already doing exploration. This is the moment you want me to do exploration. I've been doing exploration for the last 20 minutes while I've been building my settlement. Oh, shit, I've jumped ahead far too quickly, and now I'm just stuck, and I've explored the things, and now I just have to wait until the thing happens. So there is a bit of a balance issue, definitely, in the tutorialization of the game as well. But I'll play a bit more. I'll see how it hits. I'll see how it lands. It's kind of one where I'm like, if I've got a city builder rich at the moment, I'll be playing Frostpunk 2. That's been the best sort of city builder that I've played over the last couple of years. So we'll see how that kind of lands. But just maybe to finish us out on for a very quick touch. I managed to get myself early access to the Battlefield 6 beta.
Oh, yes.
And I've been playing for a couple of days.
I forgot Battlefield was a thing until people were talking about it, which is a shame because I know you enjoyed Battlefield. It never felt as good as Call of Duty to me. But yeah, it'd be so good if it was like Battlefield came back. We need a bit, you know, a few more competitors in the space.
Yeah,
and
absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And what I've played so far, I am enjoying. I like Battlefield. I think especially Battlefield 3 and 4, which this is like this spiritual successor to, as such. I very much enjoy Battlefield 3 and 4 for sort of the fast paced element, but also the squad based.
That's fast paced to you.
To it.
God, well, I played Battlefield 3 and I was like, why is it taking me so long to respawn all the way back in? Then I got to run all the way back in and get shot. And then
it depends on the game mode, right?
No.
So it is a bit.
I want to.
It's not as fast
Nicki
as Call of Duty.
Shoot, have her stab me in the back. And respawn immediately, so I can stab.
Respawn
Nicki
with
Minaj.
Snoop Dogg looking over you as
exactly.
well.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Battlefield ain't that. Battlefield is not that at all.
Yeah, I'm not patient enough for Battlefield.
Yeah,
I think the sound and the sometimes the feel of the guns were were top notch.
And so far with a couple of hours that I've played now with Battlefield 6, having played several maps, several modes, and tried a couple of the different like audio options that it allows you, it feels like EA has allowed the teams making it to really get into it.
Can you explain the sounds? Because as I said, like some of the sound design in Battlefield was the
best thing about it. Some of the sound design is just like you've got, and I think this comes from 5 or might come from 2042, which was the modding game that came. But they've got like normal audio and a couple of different options. But one of them is, I think it's called War Tales. And basically, it essentially just ramps up everything. Mm-hmm. So everything is dialed up, and the bass is dialed up massively. So the idea of it is that if you're next to an explosion and you're just playing the game normally, the explosion will happen, you run past it, you play the game, you shoot some people, you move on. If you're playing on the War Tales mode, the explosion happens, and it's so fucking loud that it actually affects, you know, it doesn't necessarily affect you, but it has the idea that you have experienced that explosion whilst you've been stood next to you. And like an explosion happening next to you would be so loud that your ears would pop and you would be affected kind of by it. And the war tails thing ramps up everything so much that an explosion can happen next to you. You can hear almost nothing. Like you hear the reverberations of the explosion.
Oh,
and a tank fucking fires near you. And like, fucking hell, that was so big and so loud. And they're trying to replicate the idea this is what it would be like standing next to an explosion, standing next to a tank. The guns are like, cool, pap, 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 pap. Guns are like, you know, big noise, loud. A war zone is fucking, I would imagine, insanely crazy. And they've tried to bring a couple of like audio modes in, which were in a previous game, but I think they've ramped them up slightly in this, to basically be like, no, this is an experience. You know, you want to play the game, great, play the game, absolutely. But do you want to play the game as an experience? Yes.
Having like a preteen saying, "Mom, where are you? Why are you there?" Yeah, over voice chat, just like, "Mom, I don't want to go to bed yet."
Mate, just cuts all of that out, and there's literally you've just been blown up, and all you can hear is just
a grenade.
And it's like, just like perfect. Just that's exactly what
ears
I want.
Ringing.
Yep.
And you're saying, like, "Mom, I don't want to go."
Yeah. And you think, so that person's not saying, "Mum, I don't want to go to bed." They're crying. They're crying for their mum because their legs have been blown off. This feels like war. I absolutely get it. This is it. This is exactly right.
Yeah, it just distorts that child's voice and just turns it into like Saving Private Mind. Go, "Mommy."
Oh, mate. And some of that, but some of that is it's trying to build into that kind of much more filmatic, that much more experiential way of thinking about these kinds of things, and very much that is how it feels. So with the War Tales kind of audio, like, it's so much bigger.
Like how I don't really like Battlefield as a series, but I just remember the sounds design.
Yes,
I said that like not knowing that this was an actual thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where it was like, that is their USP. So, yeah, lean into it. Because I remember, I think one of the Call of Duties from, I think it was one of the recent Modern Warfare games, which is like, which one is that? That's probably like six of them at this point. They're all called different things.
Modern Warfare 3, 3, 2,
yes.
3, no, 3, 2, who knows?
Yeah. That one, yeah. Where it's just like, oh, we're going to lean more into like, you know, what it actually feels like to be near these guns and handle them and stuff like that. And they probably ditched that when people were flying in the next Black Ops or whatever and Nicki Minaj is there. But it's just, it's like, yeah, like, if Battlefield can lean into that, that sounds seriously cool. Like,
yeah,
because
absolutely.
They have the underlying decent enough kind of gameplay, especially if they go back to, like, 3 and 4. If they can leverage that, that would be cool. But you're thinking then these are like, I say, you know, with some jest, but it's like a lot of people will be playing this with the game audio dimmed, talking to their friends. How much is that going to translate into it actually being a selling point for the for most of the audience who aren't just being like, I want to know what it's like to be in war, rather than I just want to dick around with my friends each evening.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. And I think Battlefield, you know, if you had it set on just the normal settings and those kinds of things, if you can get a group of people to play, even better. But I even just playing sort of by myself and things, I was able to jump into sort of games and, dependent on the map and the mode, very much just be like, this is a nice, quick game to play. Okay. It's really good. The gunplay feels nice. It's a good FPS game.
That's good.
The sound design is good. That actually, even listening with headphones and things, I'm getting a lot of sort of ambient sound and stuff. I'm like, cool, I can hear footsteps. Someone's around me. Stop. Hunker down. Find somewhere to fucking hide. Great, there they are. Bam, 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 bam. Mm-hmm. And it's so many, I think, of the expertise of the four studios that have made this. Criterion, Motive, Dice, maybe another one as well.
There's not that many on it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely.
I know there's like some usually support shootings, a few will, you know, hop in and there and probably all be credited, but is it literally they have...
Oh, the splash screen. The splash screen is like the four studios that have made this game. And it could be like, great, Motive. I can see Criterion. I can see where the vehicles have kind of come in and mm-hmm. been refined and those kinds of things. DICE is fucking brilliant at that Battlefield, that first player experience kind of thing. Can see where they've come in and put their sort of expertise and things like that. And so far, there's only been a few.
Did you say Respawn is one of them?
No, it's not Respawn. There. It's Criterion, DICE, it's Motive, DICE. It's Criterion, and another studio. So
they're just gearing up to be Activision, where it's like, are a part of the Battlefield machine. Let's try this out for size.
Yeah.
Instead of making racing games, making cars.
Yes, and they may be making a racing game, but I fucking highly doubt it. Knowing what EA is like with how they're doing so,
Pod
Star Wars Outlaws Pod Racer. Yeah. Outlaws is completely dead. So Star Wars Jedi Survivor Pod Racer or something like that. You can kind of see where they would have used the talents and the expertise of the studios to mm-hmm. create an overall kind of experience. And it is quite a big experience. There's quite a lot going on. There's lots of game modes. There's obviously lots of gameplay within just the first player experience. It's not just pop in, have your machine gun, run around and shoot some people. It's squad-based. It wants you to be more tactical. Mm-hmm. It wants you to be considerate and think about those kinds of things. I mean, there's a bunch of lone wolves enough that snipers can kind of disappear off and sort of do that kind of thing.
I'm not being a sniper. I'm running into the battlefield with my assault rifle.
Mate, pull shotgun.
Nicki Minaj is,
there's so many close quarters experiences within this.
Okay.
Buildings, the destruction of buildings and those kinds of things is a huge thing in Battlefield 6.
Levolution.
They don't call it that anymore. That's gone, mate. That's gone. Levolution is gone.
It'll always be Levolution in my heart. So.
It's now just blow the shit out of everything. You know, it's not like, this one building collapses. It's no, everything fucking collapses. Yeah. Blow the shit out of as much stuff as you want.
Okay, so they have... Because that's another thing that I didn't like about Battlefield, where it's like, yes, we have these grand scale maps, but the mm-hmm. close quarters parts do not feel as exciting as it did in Call of Duty. Because I think that's what Call of Duty does great. It does great things on a small, medium, and large scale at any point of the map. Whereas I just thought Battlefield was just like a bit all over the place. Like, you have these large maps, but with the squad-based thing and everything and the respawn points, where it's like everything feels disjointed. Like, you have these mm-hmm. battles going on here, and it has nothing to do with the battles going on here. Everything just felt very disparate and separate.
And
so
I think
they've got things a bit more intertwined and a bit...
Yeah, again, depending on the game mode... I think you'll find that you will get a sense of the overarching kind of progress of a game mode versus a conquest, where you've got 5 points that you can just take, and there's the push and pull of taking those points continuously through the game. But the maps are built in a way where actually, like, cool, this is a really good mid-range combat area. This is a really good close quarters combat area. I'm not good at close quarters combat. I will go to point E and I will sit with my sniper and I will try and shoot people coming over. Or I love that mid-range combat. I'll go to point C. I love the vehicles. I will hover around points A and B because that's close to the spawn kind of point. And actually the roads and things are open in that kind of stuff. There's a map called Iberian something, and it's set in Gibraltar. And there's a section right in the middle which is lanes and alleys, very similar to another map that they've got.
Yeah,
but there's lanes, and you can go in the, you know, a bunch of the buildings and stuff. And I'm literally like, I just put my assault rifle away and I get my shotgun out, and I just stalk the fucking lanes with a shotgun. And they're like, I've got to the edge, and the enemy is not in the lanes anymore. The enemy is the other side of the plaza. And I pull my assault rifle back out, and actually there's this amazing, this really good firefight between kind of like two corners of this plaza, where they're trying to push from one side, we're trying to push from the other side, and actually you can see people flanking around, but then you're thinking like, oh shit, maybe they're flanking around the other side, and they have, and you're like, bollocks, we're shooting over here, but actually, as an assault class, I've got my shotgun as a secondary weapon, I've got a grenade launcher as a special kind of weapon as well. I just need to pop my grenade launcher off into this corner a couple of times, and even if I don't kind of hit anyone, I've done a bit of damage. I've actually destroyed the wall that they were hiding behind. I've made it more difficult for them. Like you feel so far you're always making a bit of progress.
Okay. What if there were 16 people running into that alley at the same time?
Like? Oh, they'd have all have been exploded.
Exactly, and that's why I like Call of Duty.
And it's good in a way that you could like with the amount of explosions and the amount of destruction that can happen in a building. I've been in a building when it's collapsed and not died, and been like, I really feel like I probably should have died here. Like the roof has collapsed and everything has fallen down, but why am I still okay? Was I just in like a very safe spot? I don't really know.
Cell.
Yeah. And that's happened a couple of times, so there's maybe a little bit of refinement to happen around there. And so far the beta has been pretty good. It's been a buggy in a couple of places, but nothing huge, nothing game-breaking. Nothing's broken in the middle of a game. I've not been able to get into a game a couple of times because it's frozen on loading in and a couple of bits, but, you know, normal beta issues.
Yeah.
But it's making me very, very excited for the full release.
When is the full release? This year? Or is it...
Yes, October, I believe. I don't know exactly when, but some point in October.
How many weeks before or after Call of Duty is that?
I don't know. Probably be the same weekend.
Because I remember there was one they just literally put out to... Or was that Titanfall? They literally put out to die or whatever. But yeah, because it would be good to have Battlefield back, because I really haven't kept up with that series. It feels like it's been gone for a long time.
Yes.
When you said Battlefield 2045 or something like that?
Yeah, 2042, I think it's called.
I don't even know what that is or when it came out. I remember the World War One.
Yep. The World War One was 9 years ago.
Battlefield One.
Yeah, Battlefield One.
Jesus Christ.
Which I played, which I have a lot of love for. Adil and I played a shit ton of Battlefield One together. Then they had Battlefield Five, which was a World War Two based game.
I remember that one.
Yeah, and then they released 2042. And 2042 was then the modern, future modern game, where it's not too much in the future, but it's like it's a take on the next level of stuff.
Player only? Was that multiplayer only?
When did
that come out?
It
seems like it's been a hot minute since there was a Battlefield that caught a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, off my head I would say 3 years, maybe. 2021 that came out.
So that's still a while ago. Years for like...
Yep.
It was never a yearly, annual.
It wasn't. It was a sort of every 2 years.
Yeah.
A Battlefield game
would
still come out.
4 years is quite a long time. So, but I don't know what the kind of like room, you know, what people thought about 2042, but I don't remember anything about that.
Not good things. Not good things.
There you go. So it's been like potentially 6 years since a good Battlefield game. That's a long time.
I say this every couple of years. Battlefield 4 came out in 2013. We'll go back a little bit further. Battlefield 3, so the modern Battlefield games. Battlefield 3 was 2011. Battlefield 4 was 2013. Battlefield Hardline, which was that kind of like cops and robbers.
Cop serialized game.
That was 2015. So again, 2 years. Mm-hmm. Battlefield 1 was then 2016.
Yeah.
So only a year after Hardline.
Yeah.
5 was 2018. So a 2 year period again.
I think I may have even played 5.
I didn't play any of 5. I played nothing of 5 at all.
World War Two. I swear it. Which one was the one where it was like different vignettes across the war? Was that one, Battlefield 1 or 5?
Battlefield 1 had different vignettes. It wasn't you could play a campaign mode, but it was like, here's a bit of fighting in like Egypt, and here's a bit of fighting in, you know, in Germany and in France, and here's a bit of fighting on a different front in like Turkey kind of thing.
Way to do it. Let's just get up achievements. One way to do it. Did I play Battlefield 5?
I know I didn't. I definitely didn't play 5. And then, just as you're looking, 2021.
Oh, yeah, everyone went mad because it was like a woman on the cover art.
Yes, there was.
I remember that.
There was. Yeah. Yes.
Remember those quaint days?
I know. How many women were there in World War Two that you've put one of them? Well, there were fucking loads of them, mate. So fuck you.
Or it's like they'll just get angry at seeing a woman anywhere now.
Yeah.
Such quaint days.
Mate, I literally watched a video on YouTube earlier that said this female protagonist is not a strong female protagonist, so don't be worried about any of that woke stuff. And I'm like, stop. No, fuck off. You've lost me completely.
Ended up on your feed, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I did not play Battlefield 5.
Okay.
Because it had a woman on the cover. Why would I
play that? Mate. You were like, nah, can't do that. It's not Nicki Minaj. I need a woman of colour, not a woman. Yeah. Nah, mate. It's not enough. Not enough
with
for me.
Pink hair.
In a bikini. That's what I fucking need. Yes, and then 2042 was in 2021. And then, another 4 years later for Battlefield 6. So.
Yeah, I never played Battlefield 5. But was it... Because I enjoyed 1, the vignette things. And I think, I'm pretty sure... Well, I've just seen war stories or whatever. So I think it might have had the same kind of structure as Battlefield 1.
Yep.
Maybe one day, someday, where I'm just like, have like a lapse in like... everything. My brain just maybe I'll have like, I don't know, salmonella, and I'm on my last I have my last bits of consciousness, and I'm like, what should I play? I'll play Battlefield 5 or something like that.
But to be fair, I think Battlefield 6 has got a single player campaign to it as well. So you could just go jump into the new one at some point when it's available on whatever subscription service or EA Play or those kinds of things that exist.
Did Battlefield 2042 have a campaign?
I don't know.
No, it didn't.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I played the beta for 2042. It was really, really buggy. It didn't feel good. I didn't enjoy it as much. And I'm like, cool, I won't play the full game when it comes out.
Yeah, it didn't have a campaign. But it had a man on the cover.
It does make a difference.
It does.
Maybe. What's Battlefield 6 got on the... Oh, I think Battlefield 6 is 4 indiscriminate characters with their backs to you looking out over
robots.
The landscape. You've got no idea who
they're
they are.
They're robots. Yeah,
they could be
robots.
Men, they could be women, they could be other.
It's T-1000.
Just pure brutality. Yes. All liquid forms. Good. Let's finish there for the evening. We'll talk probably more about Battlefield 6 as I play a bit more of the beta this weekend. There's a couple of beta weekends. This weekend, I got into early. And then next weekend for about 4 days, I think, which is an open beta, which I think actually from tomorrow, anyone can join the open beta actually for the first weekend, and then anyone can join the second weekend as well.
It's a beta. I think the best beta that I've played is Titanfall, the first Titanfall. That was fun.
Oh wow,
that was fun.
How many years was like ago so... was that now? 2015, 2014.
Jeez,
more than 10,
that, isn't it? Because I think it came out in 2014, so like 2013 maybe. I remember it was like, oh yes, because it was like the same weekend as like The Last of Us DLC came out, and that was a good weekend.
2014,
Really,
yeah.
like February, yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, that was a
well, the,
good
yeah,
weekend.
Titanfall, March the 11th, 2014, it released. So yeah, beta was probably a few weeks before that. So yeah,
Yeah.
early during February, absolutely. Nice.
Good times. Good memories.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's round out. Any further thoughts about the beer as you have drank it?
Yeah, I think when I became more accustomed to the bitterness, yeah, those fruity flavors and like the piney flavors, I was noticing them a bit more, so it wasn't quite the as swift a experience from beginning to end. So yeah, it was good, but yes, it did the things that I expect a West Coast IPA to do, which is
Good.
like be bitter, be a bit more piney, less fruit forward, but still have those fruits in it and just have that, rounded experience, but
Nice.
definitely lean into the bitterness a bit more. So yeah, it was
Yeah.
good.
Good. And I think for me, the beer again, the beak didn't change a huge amount. It did kick up in its creaminess a touch, but that initial flavour is what you get. And it sticks around and doesn't change a huge amount. And it lasts that little bit, but it doesn't evolve much from there. But it's still a very nice beer. And I would imagine during a festival would be ideal to start your
Yeah,
festival
for sure,
experience
for sure.
out on. So good. They're the games and they're the beers that we have experienced this week. If you want to talk to us, you can do so. Go to outoflives.net. You can find Out of Lives on the YouTubes. I don't know what the YouTubes are. Go to YouTube.
Laptops.
That's the thing. Or you can talk to us. I'm at Nova unders no Nova 47 on Blue Sky. The underscore is gone for Blue Sky because it didn't allow underscores. And Lucy is.
Juicy Loose 9.
Perfect. And subscribe and comment and rate and review on your podcast service of choice if you wish to do so. Thank you very much for joining us this week. We've been tacked up and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.
Ciao from capitalism. Adieu and bye from me.
www.outoflives.net